As always, Max and Stacy bringing you the truth about markets, because the markets reveal the truth. They are the ruins, the entrails of our day. If you can read the markets, you can read what's going to be happening in the next 6 months. And I'm looking at the Financial Times front page today. We saw something very interesting. It says, no fretting on Wall Street over hedge fund threat. Now, Germany's top financial regulator yesterday tried to persuade Wall Street it should be, quote, scared as hell about the threat posed by hedge funds to the world financial system.
He ought to know.
The audience at Goldman Sachs.
Oh, they're our favorite audience.
And, you know, let's talk about this for a second, because the German financial regulator has a good point. The world banks who create these derivatives are flooding the globe's financial system in much the same way as Hurricane Katrina flooded the basin of New Orleans. The levies in place in the world financial system, the insurance products that protect people from catastrophic financial ruin, are breaking apart because they can't hold back these trillions and trillions of dollars worth of derivative products that the banks continue to create, because they get fees to create the loans and the derivatives, but they don't have to account for where they go or how that risk is offset anywhere in the economy, just like Exxon can create a lot of environmental risk in its business practices, but it has no costs or offsetting risks for what they do either. This is why a bank like a Goldman Sachs is as much of an environmental terrorist as a company like Exxon. But they're, instead of spilling oil into the ecosystem that kills, they spill risk in the form of bad loans. And this is what German regulators are trying to get the world to recognize, that the world financial system is as perilously close to catastrophe as the world's ecosystems. And in fact, the two have a similar source at the mouth of their origination. And this is the so-called neoliberal model, which has been in force now, really, quite strongly since the economists in Chicago, in the famed Chicago School of Economics, the Monetarist School of Economics, the Milton Friedman School of Economics, has really been prevalent in the neoliberal school for several generations now. And this is the idea that you can cure all the world's economic ills by fine-tuning the world's interest rates and money supplies. But what has happened is that someone like Alan Greenspan has really failed in his duty to adjust interest rates to reflect systematic risk. He simply, at the drop of any catastrophe, lowers rates for the most part. This is his only response. He's an asymmetric Fed governor. He doesn't really raise rates to match world risks. He simply lowers rates to make the world economy grow, as he calls it. But in this case, the word growth, which is usually associated with this idea of wealth and wealth sharing, does not account for ecological risk. So again, let's look at a company like Exxon, for example. Their stock may be growing by billions of dollars, and this is applauded on Wall Street and in Washington as economic growth. But that billions of dollars of stock growth in value comes with hundreds of billions of dollars of ecological catastrophe and risk. So net-net, if you put the environment onto the balance sheet of Exxon, the company is actually contributing to negative growth. And this is what has been invisible for so long up until now, because now we have, for example, this headline from the Independent newspaper in the UK. This is from Tony Blair's chief scientist, who has come out and said that Hurricane Rita is the smoking gun. This is global warming, says environmental chief.
What's his name?
Well, this is, I believe, the same individual who we've quoted on this show a few times.
Sir John Lawton.
Chairman of the Royal Commission on Environmental Pollution. So there seems to now be a dawning in the consciousness of the global community that global warming is causing this catastrophic event in the form of super hurricanes. And what is Wall Street's
hyper-hurricane?
And what is Wall Street's response to the hyper hurricanes? They don't want to take any accountability.
Mm-hmm.
They only have one direction, which is go. And as we covered this week already on the show, in the case of Goldman Sachs, their earnings are up 84%.
Yes.
In large part because they sell off catastrophe bonds into the global banking community to insulate themselves against the risk of acting as predatory capitalists and financial terrorists. They simply create catastrophe bonds, or they create so-called terror bonds. Now, the terrorist threat, the 9/11 threat, the Madrid bombings, and particularly the bombings in London, were in the direct result of this neoliberal model that places profits over people and drains the world community of much-needed capital. Yes, it's making a few people wealthy, but it's making the vast majority of global citizens poverty-stricken. And this is causing both hurricanes in New Orleans and bombings in London. It has at its source the same philosophy, neoliberalism, which has as the same practitioners, Goldman Sachs and bankers on Wall Street and the city, and it's all leading to the one inevitable result, which is a breakdown in the financial community, as talked about by Germany's top financial regulator on the front page of the Financial Times, and it's leading to environmental collapse, as is talked about on the front page of UK's paper today.
The Independent.
The Independent.
Over there. Now, so what I want to see, this analogy comparing Katrina, Hurricane Katrina and the floods to the world financial system, it's quite interesting in that you see these warnings, no fretting on Wall Street over hedge fund threat. Yet this has been going on for the last 2 or 3 years as well, in that climate climate scientists were saying that there's going to be the biggest threat, one of the biggest threats to America is if a Force 5 hurricane hits New Orleans. And yet the levees meant to protect you were only built for Force 3 at the most. So they knew a Force 4 or a Force 5 would topple it, but they did nothing to it, even though there were warnings, warnings, warnings. And it seems like that's the same sort of thing, is that as they create these massive derivatives, and the derivatives market is, you know, goes from $300 trillion a year to $900 trillion a year, and yet the levies that Alan Greenspan has in place, and that the which he does mention that individual consumers are willing to are not being paid for the risk that they're taking. They don't understand the risk they're taking.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, the world seems to have a risk levy of only like a Force 2 or 3. And yet they're not prepared for a long-term capital management times 5.
They're not. And that's a brilliant analogy, and it is an apt analogy. And the root problem is that there's more money selling bonds to protect these entities from the risks that they're perpetrating than there is building levies. If these banks could make as much money building levies as they do selling bogus paper and fraudulent bonds,
yes,
then the suicide arbitrage gap would close. But right now in America, you have a suicide arbitrage. And the question is, do you want to die quick or you want to die fast? If you want to die, that's not much of a choice, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Quick or fast? Or what was the name of that movie with Sharon Stone? The Quick and the Dead.
The Quick and the Dead.
This is similar to what's happening in America right now. Either you become a pernicious, predatory banker and are willing to sell your neighbor to the devil to make a few banking fees and therefore die slowly because you're behind a wall protecting yourself from the consequences of your action, as they're trying to do in Israel,
mm-hmm.
against what they've done to the Palestinians,
mm-hmm.
or you die quick, which is that you say, you know what, I don't want to become a financial terrorist on Wall Street and work for Goldman Sachs. I'm going to be a hardworking middle-class person, in which case the levee breaks and you're flooded and you commit suicide this way. Suicide because you didn't take the necessary actions required to replace your government through the democratic process and through a more genteel reworking of the priorities within the community. I don't want to get back into the Second Amendment debate today because this
otherwise
has been...
we're going to rename our show, the Second Amendment.
Well, you don't want to cover that again
there
if you listen to our show.
There are a lot of kooks. There are a lot of kooks out in Montana that run Second Amendment shows, so you can go check
into
there.
I'm just chomping at the bit to talk about. Anyway, you know, before we went on the air, so to speak, you were mentioning something to me while you were preparing that croissant and jam and butter naked, as you do every morning with your full naked body
This is a story that really interests me, and a conference, the Telecommunications Policy Research Conference is going on today, tomorrow.
It's going on tomorrow.
Yeah, in Washington. And it appears that America is, according to Forbes magazine today, dropping down the list of broadbanded up sort of countries. They're number 12 at the moment. And it appears that, according to the research into the world broadband penetration rates, that Comcast and Verizon are the two largest broadband providers in America. And they argue that the reason why Korea, Netherlands, Denmark, Iceland, Canada, Switzerland are all ahead of them is that the government in those countries are subsidizing the costs of these.
Yeah.
Now, according to Comcast and Verizon, they say the private sector lacks access to cheap capital, like municipal bonds. So they're not able to provide it as cheaply as government, they argue,
mm-hmm.
as a reason to avoid competition in the market. And yet this is exactly what Tony Blair this week is proclaiming for the reason for introducing the private sector into the NHS, the National Health Service, is that they provide a better cost.
Mm-hmm.
They provide efficiency
right.
to the cost.
That's right.
Now,
Verizon
and
which is actually the cheaper solution, government or private corporations?
Well, of course they have access to cheaper capital. The government does.
Well, okay, they can if they choose to.
Yes.
But a lot of times they don't choose to. But sometimes they do choose to. And the dividing line is a dividing line of opportunism. Now, in the case of broadband in America versus NHS in the UK, let's compare those two. Along the lines of money, access to money, and cost of money. Broadband access in America is being thwarted because those in the copyright industry in Hollywood are scared to death
mm-hmm.
that Hollywood's going to go the way of the music industry and that DVD sales and videos are going to be swapped online for free and that their sales are going to crash as happened in the music industry. So they're doing whatever it takes to stop broadband penetration in America, even though the Hollywood industry, which I guess is roughly a $20 or $60 billion industry, give or take a few billion, is a really fraction of the overall U.S. economy that would benefit from massive broadband access throughout the entire $10 trillion U.S. economy would benefit from easier access to broadband. But because Hollywood is the retard in the class, the slow kid, the kid with Down syndrome, the entire U.S. economy is being asked to slow down and wait for the retard in the class. And I don't mean any offense to retards by saying this.
And
please don't send me an email saying my sister's a retard and I found your comments offensive. I mean, the fact is that there are, in occasions, elements that produce children with lack of brain development skills, as is the case of the America, due to the copyright cartel, which is infringing on America's ability to grow a competitive economy due to their own selfish, greedy needs in Hollywood. That's plain and simple to see.
Well, following up on that, the report does point out that not only is the U.S. being a laggard in broadband penetration going to have implications for America's social and economic standing in the world, they say that lack of growth of broadband penetration may also hamper efforts by content owners, music, movies, television, and video games to digitally distribute their product. And that's the exact reason why they're laggards, is because they want to hamper efforts by content owners. They don't want a flourishing market. They don't want competition. They argue, Verizon and Comcast says they don't want competition because it's because they don't have access to cheap capital, they claim. But this seems to be a clear case of no free market.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they blame the market once again. This nebulous, vague concept, the market. On the show, The Truth About Markets, we try to untangle the way people abuse the markets, both verbally and financially. And here's a case of verbal market abuse, where they're verbally abusing the market and claiming that it's incapable to deliver the goods because of the cost of money per their analysis of the situation. But if the truth about markets is that they have an agenda, content providers have an agenda, they want to thwart broadband penetration in the United States to protect their monopolies, because they still believe that if they can get $15 or $16 for a DVD, it's better than trying to get 6 or 7 cents on 1,000 DVDs. Because in their minds, they think that they'll never be able to compete with this. They'd rather keep their monopolies intact as best that they can. And it's never worked in Hollywood. The studio system crumbled, and this system of cartel monopoly perpetration will crumble. And you look at groups like the EFF, the Electronic Freedom Foundation, and Lawrence Lessig and those guys, they've got a whole battery of lawyers who take the copyright cartel to court, and they're not going to be able to stop growth in America so that a few producers in Los Angeles can scam all the money and scam all the cream off the top. It's extraordinarily greedy for Hollywood producers to say, we don't want the $10 trillion U.S. economy to grow because we want the money. And this is just extraordinarily greedy. Now, let's look at the markets and the way they're being abused verbally and financially on the other side of the Atlantic, in London, in the U.K.
Right,
Tony
here.
Blair is saying that the NHS, the government, can't provide services for people because the government's access to capital is not as competitive as the private sector's ability to access capital. He's making the complete opposite argument to defend his agenda. His agenda is that he gets an extraordinary amount of money personally to sell off the public domain to private contractors. There's no reason at all why you would want private corporations to run your hospitals, your schools, or your transportation system. These entities that require end-to-end cooperation, not competition, but cooperation, are best suited by government's participation. A private contractor is not the place you want in those three areas. Now, Tony Blair knows this instinctively, but he knows that if he gives the private sector the public assets of the hospital system, he stands to make huge amounts of gains personally. This is a personal greed driving his decisions, because when he leaves office, he wants to get a job working as a CEO for one of these private contractors. That's obvious. He's not operating in the public domain. He's actually operating against the public interest. It's a hanging offense, in my opinion. It's treasonous. His position in the NHS, his position in hospitals, his position in the rail system, giving these public assets away to private contractors so that when he leaves government, he gets a cushy job and everyone else dies in rail accidents, dies of staff infection, or they can't afford education, so they kill themselves. No, that's not even getting into the IRAC policy.
Or they end up so stupid.
That's not even getting into the Iraq policy, which is cooking the books, cooking the intelligence, cooking the law books. This guy is mired in blood. He's up to his eyeballs in blood. I don't even think he can see. I think he's above. He's now 10, 40 leagues deep down in the ocean of blood. Mm-hmm. He's got to be one of the bloodiest psychopaths ever to hold office since Pol Pot. Or is it Pot Pol?
You always say Pot Pol, but it's actually Pol Pot. But it's always...
Let's call him PP.
You speak so fast that I can never interrupt you and say it's Pol Pot, not Pot Pol.
Well, we have the PPP, Private-Public Partnership, and we got the PP.
The Pol Pot Partnership.
Pol Pot Partnership. Tony Blair, Pol Pot Partnership. That's what PPP should stand for.
Uh-huh. I think so, too.
Well, he's a dictator. Pol Pot, Stalin, Hitler, these are dictators. That's the point I'm trying to make. You got all the history and the geography. I've got the finance. Together, we're Max and Stacy. This is the truth about markets. It's like a hand in glove or a hand in shirt, depending on your point of view. What? Yeah, Tony Blair, he's got his legacy now in education, health, and the transportation system. All have been, damaged to the point of it's going to cost the taxpayer in the UK a tremendous amount of money to repair these areas eventually when they drop the PPP schemes and they realize that that was just a service that Blair was providing for his banker buddies and corporate buddies to get himself a good job when he leaves the office finally, probably in the US, where they seem to harbor financial terrorists with impunity. But if you look at the underlying facts of what's happening in each of these areas, in the education sector, for example, in the UK, they want to go over to a style that you find in the U.S. for testing students, the SAT, Scholastic Aptitude Testing. Mm-hmm. Now, what they have discovered in America is that this SAT testing process, it favors the wealthy.
Yes,
and
it
weeds out the poor people.
Mm-hmm.
So here in America, which is a country that thrives on ghettos and racism, they need a way to weed out the blacks from society and the poor. So they give them an SAT test. the wealthy can afford tutors to teach them the answers of how to pass the test. If you can't afford the tutor, you don't score well, and therefore you don't get into a university, and the university is where you make all of your friendships that carry you into the financial terrorism sector. And since you can't get into the schools, you're left behind. So now that Tony Blair, because he wants to emulate America as in every way possible, he's bringing in the SAT-type scoring to create in the UK more ghettos, because there's nothing more profitable in ghetto than ghettos. Whether it's Israel creating the Palestine ghetto, whether it's the water companies trying to create water ghettos in Bolivia, whether it's the Iraq ghetto created now by America and the UK, nothing makes more money than ghettos, and nobody's a better ghetto builder than the U.S. and the U.K. You wanted to say something, honey? I feel you...
No, I was just going to say about the SATs. The other thing they found in research about why poor people and why black people tend to perform far worse than rich white people in America is that rich white men tend to be the ones who write the questions for the SAT. So their questions, the way they're formulated, and remember, I mean, that we've taken the SATs before, and they're all based around sort of white, rich, suburban life. The sort of questions they ask, like, if Jimmy walks down the street, if young James walks down the street to buy an organic apple from, you know, they create questions which are based around white suburban lifestyles.
Right, or a question like, what's the margin requirement for an out-of-the-money put spread?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, oh, let's say I'm a white kid, my dad's a banker, that's the cost of the stock minus the margin requirement plus the option exchange. Yeah, that's right. You go ahead. You get to go past go and collect $200 for being white in the game of Monopoly.
They know your daddy's a broker then.
Yeah.
If you know that.
Because the broker writes the questions.
So they let you through.
But I'm a black kid. I live in the poor ghetto. And I'm like, what the hell's a put option butterfly spread? Oh, you don't get to go forward. You don't get to collect $200. Go directly to jail. You go directly to jail. And by the way, the rich guy owns the jail. He's making money if you go to jail. He owns the hospital. He owns the school. He owns the transportation system to get you to jail. So, you see, it creates a wealth and income gap that keeps spreading, and it's being addressed at the elementary school level. They get the white kids on the BOBO, the free money tit, right away. Learn the difference in the options market and how to trade them. Become a financial terrorist before you get out of grade school. And you, too, can be a racist bastard like you have in the UK and the US, where the only good black people are dead black people. That's the ethos in these two countries. It's getting more in the UK, as you see the word ghetto appearing in the UK press more and more. They keep it in parentheses. I saw in the UK paper they had the word ghetto in parentheses as if, wow, what is this? What's a ghetto? We're a social democracy. We don't have ghettos. Well, guess what? You've got knives, guns, and ghettos.
Good evening and welcome to Coin on the Track here on Resonance FM.
Apologies for that interruption there. It's had a slight IT problem. I hope to return to Truth About Markets very shortly. Many apologies to the program makers.
And the truth about markets.
That was very profound. Again.
Sex. That's ultimately what I'm talking about.
Sorry, Robin.
Oh, yeah. So how does it happen? Well, let's look at this, for example. Killer heat wave may have fueled global warming. This is an interesting headline in The Guardian because it shows the incestuous relationship between global warming and industry, because industry causes global warming, and then they say global warming creates the killer heat wave. You see the way it's a dog chasing its own tail at this point, and it's getting bigger and bigger. It's getting more exponentially worse in terms of the rate at which the environment is warming up, the rate at which the hurricanes are slapping or bitch slapping America, the rate at which the crops are failing. Yes, you have a question in row one?
I have a question. Okay, now this killer heat wave may have fueled global warming from Thursday's Guardian. They also point out scientists have studied this heat wave from 2 years ago. I remember when 20 to 30,000 people died in Europe. And what they found was that contrary to what Tony Blair and maybe Bush and a lot of apologists for global warming is like, hey, look at the bright side of global warming. We've got sunnier weather here in Britain. well, these kind of guys have always argued that, you know, it'll be like a agriculture will bloom. Everything will have, like, easier food to grow. Everything will be great. But what the scientists found from 2 years ago was actually there is a limit to the amount of carbon dioxide that plants are able to absorb, and they did not grow more with more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. They, in fact, grew less.
Well, these guys, they get on TV, and they paint the rosy scenario. And they say, oh, we have warmer weather, we're going to be all wearing bathing suits and slashing and slathering suntan lotion on each other's naked bodies. Isn't it great? But it's just, if they didn't own the media, they would never get on the media.
Mm-hmm.
But because they own CNBC, is owned by NBC, which is a defense contractor, which is making money slaughtering Muslims, they get on TV and they say these stupid things. Then people can't tell the difference between a stupid person on CNBC, an advertisement for an SUV, and a scientist saying that Katrina is a direct hit, a result of global warming. So in the consumer mind, it's just big jumble. What do they do to cope? They take drugs, which are also owned by the same companies. So they love you to take drugs. They love you to commit suicide. They love you to sit there in your house and eat yourself to death because they're making money selling you the food, the drugs, the stupid media, which sells the products, the climate change, the global warming, it all good for them, especially if they're selling the bonds to insure the perpetrators of their risks, as we see in places like Goldman Sachs. Probably the biggest financial terrorists in the world today, and Deutsche Bank. Those are the two biggest, I would say.
They own most of the derivatives, don't they?
They do. Yeah.
Or is it J.P. Morgan?
I think Bank of America has got a huge derivatives portfolio. But, you know, Goldman clearly is, I would say, if you had to put a bullseye on the head of a banker, it would be Goldman Bankers and Partners.
Okay.
Keep
well,
that in mind.
Cut that now.
No, I'm just, you know, being entertaining. So also in the Financial Times, we see something interesting. Product for rate options unveiled. Super derivatives. You see, this is what I'm talking about. They keep coming up with new ways for corporations to shed risk and for individuals to shed their personal responsibility of their commitment of these financial and ecological terrorist acts. Super derivatives, which is actually a brand name, provider of an internet-delivered options pricing platform, yesterday unveiled a product for the pricing of interest rate options, a section of the market for which it said current models were imperfect. So here, interest rate arbitrage. Now, interest rates, if they go up or down, this is something the Fed tries to do to regulate the growth or not growth or stimulate growth in the economy, but it's lost the ability to regulate the economy because of products like these that give individuals who have enough capital to start with a way to do an end run mm-hmm. around any attempt by the government to regulate the markets. I know this personally. I have a portfolio. If I know, and the Fed is very good at telegraphing its intentions on interest rates, which is something I think they should not tell the market which way they're going to go with interest rates, because then they can create and invent products to do an end run around the results of what they're trying to do. If somebody says to you, tomorrow I'm going to impose a law that will make it very difficult for you to park your car in such a way that it allows you to do an end run around that law and either park the car in a way that is invisible to the person who's trying to impose the regulation, it doesn't make any sense to even start to impose that regulation. So why should the Fed telegraph what its intentions are if the market, because they have virtually unlimited access to capital, because they have nothing to stop them from borrowing money because there's no connection between money and the economy because since we went off the gold standard. You can print money all day long. You can originate loans all day long. There's no attempt to account for where the loans eventually go. There's no counterparty to those loans. So here you create a new product, which gives you a way to speculate on interest rates. And it's just adding to the problem because it makes more and more people immune from the risks of their actions, whether it's their social actions, their political actions, their industrial actions. And once again, I suppose this will be a test. This will be a question on this year's SAT question.
Exactly.
SAT test in America.
Yeah.
Describe super derivatives. Of course, all the rich banker kids, you know, Jim Rogers kids, they're learning Chinese and super derivatives. They'll know the answer. They get to go ahead. They can collect $200 and go in Monopoly. They get the Monopoly. The poor black kid in New Orleans will be like, what the hell? You know, they go to jail. They go to jail, but don't worry because we'll give you a stock in the jail in which we're sending you to the jail. They give you stock options in the jail they send you to. How about that? I think that's a good product. Why doesn't Goldman Sachs come up with jail stock options for prisoners they're sending to jail in places all over the world? Problem is they wouldn't let the prisoners have it. They would give all the white kids. I think actually that's called slavery, isn't it? Jump down, turn around, pick a bale of derivatives. Jump down, turn around, pick a bale of derivatives. Oh, Goldman, why are you a slaver? Oh, Goldman, why are you slaving us? You know what I'm saying? They're slave drivers. Okay. Moving right along. Euro plunges amid fears of policy paralysis. Okay?
Yeah.
If you read the American press, Europe is in trouble, and Germany is in trouble. Even though Germany, export market, is booming, and the corporate... they're making lots of money.
They're making lots of money. They have an export market. Their population isn't stupid. And the profits are massively increasing. They just keep laying off people, though, and outsourcing their jobs. And the population gets the blame for the corporation.
Well, what I want to get to is that, according to the analysis from the U.S. side, the European market is not growing fast enough than the U.S. No. But the European market, by virtue of not growing in the model of the neoliberal Milton Friedman Chicago School model, is also not generating as the same toxic exhaust.
Mm-hmm.
They're not creating the same garbage and CO2 emissions that they are in the U.S. So the European model should be applauded because it has been able to sustain an economy with less garbage. So therefore, the European needs to get tough with America and say, you're growing too fast because it's a faulty model. For every 3% growth in wealth you're creating, so-called wealth, you're creating much more than that in irreversible ecological damage. So it's not for Europe to grow faster. It's for America to grow less. And Europe should start getting tough. And the fact that the euro is kind of a linchpin in this global matrix, you know, hasn't been explored enough in terms of its relationship to the global ecology. Yes?
Yes.
In row one again?
But, first of all, the euro only plunged, and then it's already come back since America has had to release some of the true financial figures of consumer confidence collapsing, inflation going up 5.1%, da-da-da-da-da, and the deficit rising. But also, I think the coverage of Germany really exposes that collusion between the media and the financial markets, and that I'm sure most people out there listening would assume that the German population is bad. They're naughty. They just don't get it. They just need to wake up and smell the coffee, right? This is the general sort of feeling you get reading the press. However, you know, 35% voted for the CDU, 34.8%, something like that, voted for Schroeder. You know, only 33% of voters voted for Tony Blair.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the population here, they really want the same sort of thing that Germany does, just because their system is a bit more representative, and that's because of World War II.
Well, it gets back to what we're saying in terms of lying on the accounting, where the markets are blamed because they are not allocating capital cheaply enough in the private sector if it suits one agenda,
mm-hmm.
or it's not allocating capital cheaply enough in the government sector to suit somebody else's agenda. And in the media, it's the same thing. If the Germans, if it suits Murdoch's need to be a greedy guy, he'll portray Germany's economy as not growing. Whereas the fact is that if you look at it from an ecological point of view, the problem is not Germany, but the U.S. The U.S. is causing, as was pointed out in the paper today, it was less than 5% of the population. It causes 25% or more of the world's ecological damage, and that's all as a result of the so-called GDP growth, neoliberal model, productivity-manipulated, inflation-manipulated, Fed-manipulated model that is either, you know, leaves you with two choices, suicide slow or suicide fast. Or I got that wrong again for the second time in the same show. You either pick suicide slow or suicide fast. I think that makes sense. But look at this in the financial section of the Guardian paper. They just revealed there's an accounting ploy. Okay, that's fraud. That's called fraud. Accounting ploy.
Allegedly.
It sounds so genteel. Fraud. Okay, they put Royal Mail £537 million into profit. So the fact is that this huge, once again, the mm-hmm. mail system was running fine. But Tony Blair said, let's give it to private contractors, the private enterprise.
It's not privatized yet. They put private, they've allowed it to be, it's a public corporation, but they run it privately. So they have these private, these guys, Adam Crozier and Alan Layton, who run the company with private salary sort of salaries of private sector sort of salaries of £2 million a year, and they awarded themselves huge bonuses because profits
based on a $537 million profit. But now they say, well, we did the actual accounting and you're losing money.
Yeah, it's actually lost money.
Right.
According to the Guardian's own examination of their books.
Okay. Now this is exactly this type of accounting that's applied to the world ecology. The GDP growth crowd in America, the neoliberal crowd in America, say that the world economy is growing. Okay, but if you put the ecology back into the balance sheet, it's actually not growing. It's shrinking. Their ecological resources are disappearing. That's not growth. That's suicide.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly the same accounting methodology. The same people who run this company that is committing accounting fraud run the governments who commit ecological accounting fraud.
And, again, like I said before, it's a collusion with the media. Is that the media has already, you know, Murdoch's media has already shouted the headlines that these private sector guys running the Royal Mail have created a huge, massive profit, £537 million into profit. You know, these guys are better. These guys do it better. And you agree because you read it in The Sun, so, or the News of the World. And, but you, it's always on page like 21 that you find out actually, well, we're actually in debt. We went more into debt than we did last year. But it's just, you know, they create this confusion. This is how the Republicans do it in America. They create doubt and they create, you know,
yeah.
Your opinion.
Republicans create doubt. I think that's a good way to put it. The Republicans are applauded for their succinct messaging.
Mm-hmm.
But what they've done is they've created doubt. But the thing is that they're advocates for the devil.
They succinctly tell you lies.
They succinctly package their lies, as opposed to some other people who are very long-winded about their lies. What we try and do, Max and Stacey, the truth about markets, is to cut through all the lies and get down to the very essence of things. And there's two things we know for sure. A, the world's ecology cannot sustain the world GDP growth at this current rate, and that something's got to give. Either we become extinct as human species, or we redefine what wealth means in this world. Two, that if you're listening to this show, you should probably tell someone else to listen to this show. That's the second truth.
That's the network effect.
That's the network effect, the virus effect, the viral effect. The more people listening to the show, if you had enough people listening to the show, that means those people are not out shopping at Tesco. You see what I'm saying? We need Tesco is one of these companies that is not much more enviable than, let's say, the virus you see at the bottom of your bathtub after you take a shower. The bacteria, the soap scum. This is what they are. They're the global soap scum, Tesco.
Well,
that should be their ad campaign. Come to Tesco and be a global scum soap scum.
Well, you know also that once it reaches 1 in 3 pounds of every consumer.
Well, you're referring to now that every 1 in every 7 or 8 pounds goes to Tesco.
7.40
okay.
pounds. So once it gets to a tipping point, you can rest assured that you too will be making, not you to the band, but you to the audience, will be making only 3 or 4 pounds an hour.
Exactly. I mean, Tesco, if they get to that point where they 1 in every $2 spent in the UK goes to Tesco, they'll be done because they've exploited the globalization of wages and the conflation of wages. And
exactly.
Your wage pressures on your wages mean that you'll be making 60, 70, 80% less than you did this year.
And
so,
right now you don't notice because Tesco is forcing other people into slavery, giving you cheaper goods, so it looks like your income going down.
Your purchasing power goes up, you think.
Yes, but until it reaches a point where they do converge,
right.
And that's the tipping point.
When it converges, and that point is rapidly approaching, then you can join the huddled masses around the world. And
the ghettos that apparently are springing up all over Britain.
Right. A loaf of bread will only cost 50p at Tesco, but you'll only have 40p in your pocket. So, net, you're still broke, you know, broke ghetto monger, ghetto, you know, you got to get into the truth about markets. Listen to this show. Here's something interesting. Here's a headline in The Guardian's financial page. The city must be ready for more terror attacks, says the head of regulator, Sir Callum McCarthy, chairman of the Financial Services Authority. Says there's going to be more terror attacks. Here's my advice to you, city. You want less terror attacks? Stop committing financial terrorism. Stop depriving the global community of its right to cheap capital by hoarding the capital yourselves. Therefore, the chances are you won't be attacked. Or take your risks, take your chances. I don't think people in the city care so much that they're going to be attacked. They just want to know what the risks are, what the odds are, and how to play it in the markets.
Well, as remember that film, The Corporation, as they did interview that banker in New York who said when the Twin Towers were coming down, he was like, you know, I know it's bad. I know this is bad to say, but we were like, yes, we were in gold, and we knew we were going to be making so much money. That's all, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing. When the regulator tells the city, you're probably going to be attacked, the response of anyone working in the city, and I know because I worked on Wall Street for many years, is, well, what are the odds? And how do I play it?
But first of all, this is the guy's being like Alan Greenspan. He's telegraphing to you how to cover your own positions in the city,
mm-hmm.
but also preparing the preparing them to just keep low level workers in the city because they're going to stage a terror attack.
Yeah.
In order for war, to soften up the population to accept financial crimes.
Well, the hedge fund guys are in Berkeley Square.
They're in Mayfair. Yeah.
Okay, Mayfair.
If they were genuinely interested in staging an attack. That's where they would go.
Hypothetically speaking.
Yeah.
What tube stop is it?
Bond Street.
Bond Street. Hmm. I'll have to check that on the map later. That's very interesting. Hmm. Oh, yes. Hmm. Oh, here's something interesting. Indian airspace buzzes with first-time flyers as budget airline stage a revolution. So here, India has adopted neoliberalism, and this is applauded by Thomas L. Friedman in the New York Times. However, like Thomas L. Friedman, like most people in the United States who have a very scant knowledge of economics, fails to incorporate ecology into his model. Now, great, India's economy is growing, so-called growing, at a certain rate, but it's also generating many, 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 many times that growth rate in ecological damage. So, net-net, India is becoming an ecological terrorist because, you know, the exhaust from these cheap flights is unbelievably screwy to the global atmosphere, you know, the jet stream.
Mm-hmm.
It plays unbelievable havoc to the jet stream. And this was actually proven after 9/11 when all the jets hit the ground. They did a study of how the climate is, the atmosphere is moving. And
this is how they determined that actually the pollution, the solid pollutions in the atmosphere is actually protecting us from global warming because it's reflecting some of the sunlight.
Right.
Because the temperature skyrocketed after 9/11 because there was no air travel.
Yeah, this is gets into the doubling effect that with the particles in the air, it shields us from the heat to some degree, which is slowing global warming, but it's also, that's the slow suicide. The fast suicide is you get rid of the particles in the air, which would let in more heat, which would speed up global warming, which would create more hurricanes. That's the fast suicide. So it's a double bind. So you and I, listen to the show, watching mm-hmm. the show, mm-hmm. and me, Max, and Stacy, mm-hmm. we're getting attacked from corporations and politicians who are using financial derivative products and fancy insurance products as a invisible way and a quiet and seamless way to manipulate the ecology in such a way that it is killing us. And they're getting the fees, and we're taking all the risk. That's the equation. That's the basic equation. That's the truth about markets. Yes, in row one.
I have another point about those cheap airlines. We saw this study this week, which shows that business travel via trains is increasing massively across Europe, that more business people are taking their journeys from Paris to Amsterdam, for example, or Paris to Brussels via train. They probably know how low the standards are on these airlines, so they wouldn't dare get on them.
Well, they did a study recently that the chances of dying in an air crash have been misstated for years and years and years, because when they compare it to traveling by car or rail, they compare it in terms of trips.
Yes.
They say, they compare in terms of miles, so that your air trip
mm-hmm.
is many, many more miles than your average car trip. But if you were to do the same analysis in terms of which one is more dangerous and you merely compared of apples to apples on a trip-to-trip basis, the incidence of dying in an air crash go up quite substantially. And I think comparing on a trip-by-trip basis is a fairer way to determine the danger or lack of danger in traveling by air. You can't compare a trip to your local baker, which is a half a mile, with a trip to India, which is thousands of miles, and say that, well, you know, the trip to the local baker is a comparable to this trip over this many, many miles of travel.
Yes. The statistics can tell you anything, basically.
Intention and you have an agenda.
Yes.
And you can manipulate the markets and manipulate money supply and manipulate interest rates, and you're off the gold standard, and it's a complete fungible world. We live in a completely plastic fungible world. Anyone with the media time and the power can manipulate the markets in any way they want to. I know. I've been involved on Wall Street with blatant market manipulation schemes for years. They're just now catching up to passing laws to stop those manipulation schemes that we were doing in the 80s. They haven't even gotten to the manipulation schemes of the 90s or the double zeros yet. and I can tell you all about them, but it's kind of technical. And why bother when we can just talk about the simple relationship between the no-goodniks and those with the agenda, how they're manipulating things in ways that are plain as the nose on your face. People died in those buses due to neoliberalism. People died in New Orleans due to neoliberalism. People are dying now in Houston due to the latest hurricane. They'll probably kill some people due to neoliberalism. And there's a direct connection between the cash flow to the corrupt forces and our ability either to allow that to continue or to stop that to continue. I say, let's try to stop them with stopping their cash flow. Let's try to cut them off from their cash flow first and see how that works. I think that's the best way to attack the problem of having megalomaniac corporations who are imperial monopolist forces.
Well, megalomaniac guys in power in government as well, who you just can't get rid of. They just refuse to leave.
Yeah, you don't elect them, they still take power.
Exactly.
You know. So you want to? I think we should touch on this a little bit and give us an update, because this is a pretty interesting story, with the Basra story.
Well, the row over seized British troops is growing. The British government won't let you know that. Well, it's a really interesting story, because the first thing I thought when I first saw that two undercover soldiers were seized, right? First of all, undercover soldier. Just think of the word. What does it mean, undercover soldier? Now, there are 550 guys in Guantanamo Bay, and the only reason that Donald Rumsfeld and George Bush, according to Geneva Conventions, are able to justify having these guys declared unlawful enemy combatants. And the only reason, and look it up, Google it, George Bush and Donald Rumsfeld, the only reason they have on these guys is that they were undercover soldiers. They were not wearing uniforms. This is the only reason they're able to, according to international law, hold these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So these undercover soldiers, i.e. spies, were found in the initial reports. Again, we don't know, because the media colludes with the government, and America assassinates any journalist who tries to find out any of the truth anyway in Iraq. So according to various reports, that these undercover soldiers shot at the police, and they were found in their car. They had explosives with remote control detonator devices.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
these are British troops.
These are two undercover British soldiers. And they, you know, in Iraq, and if you read the whole blogosphere, there are many, many good, pretty good blogs coming out of Iraq from Iraqis there in English. And, the rumors always are is that America, and to a lesser extent, Britain, are the ones that are responsible for, a great percentage of the so-called terrorist attacks, especially when they're bombs rather than suicide bombers.
So the blaggers on the ground in Baghdad are accusing America and UK of stoking the civil war. So now it looks like that's true.
So these guys were put into jail, and now Britain claims that they were taken, the prison handed them over to private militias, all government authorities in Iraq claim otherwise. But anyway, this is what Britain used to knock down the prison,
mm-hmm,
and take back these unlawful enemy combatants, i.e. the undercover soldiers. They took them out of the prison, therefore betraying the sovereignty of the nation of Iraq to, mm-hmm, hold these people. But imagine if Hamid Karzai sent in troops into Guantanamo Bay and barreled over the prison there to take back his Afghani prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the same sort of situation.
Right. So the law, once again, it means one thing to one agenda and something else to another agenda. And the dividing line is money.
The dividing line is money. Who has the money? And, well, who has air? Basically, the only dividing line seems to be whoever has aircraft that can drop bombs from 30,000 feet.
So there's no law.
There is no law.
There's only money.
There's only money.
Now, that's the way to stop this madness from continuing, is to cut the bad guys off from their money. That's what we say. You got to cut them off from their money. And we do this on Karma Bank, KarmaBanque. Karma Bank.
Speaking of cutting bad guys off from their money, the other massive, massive, massive story this week, BAE was found to have been paying Pinochet of Chile, the former dictator of Chile, the former mass murderer of Chile. BAE were depositing £1 million per year into his bank accounts up until last year was the latest payment.
So dictators get a big, fat, rich severance package and pension account.
Exactly.
This is what Tony Blair hopes for.
This is what I'm sure he does hope for. So sure somebody will be paying him, whether it's Halliburton or Bechtel, whoever wiped up in Iraq.
So this annual pension account and salary and dispensation will go up depending on how many Muslims he kills.
It could do. This is just a theory. This is just a theory. We welcome Tony Blair to come up with an alternative theory.
You think Blair's pension account will exceed Pinochet's?
I think so.
How many people did Pinochet kill?
But it's also it's a complete lie. Try transferring £250 to your mother or your brother or your sister. You can't do it without being recorded. So how is it that BAE is able to send £1 million over to Pinochet? Who's saying they're not sending it to Osama bin Laden to keep up his good work?
Well, again, here's a corporation that's in the business of transferring money. And remember, this is the same corporation, Diebold, who was charged with the responsibility of creating these electronic voting machines that played a big factor in the U.S. voting of the last presidential cycle. It was discovered after the votes were tallied that these machines of Diebold were committing vote fraud.
Exactly. Well, the machines were, or the people programming it?
The people who were operating these machines. So these are the same machines that are involved in money transfer. So if you're a dictator, then they don't look at the money. But if you're some guy who's just trying to send some money back home to feed his starving kids, and you're a hardworking guy in the UK or the US, of course you're taken down to Guantanamo Bay and tortured until you admit that you are, in fact, human. And that's a crime these days, isn't it?
Yes, it does seem to be.
I thought this was interesting. In the Times World News, this girl was recruited to be on a reality TV show because she was ugly. And they were going to do some big surgical reconstruction of her to make her, quote, unquote, beautiful. But they decided at the last minute they didn't want to bother.
This is a show in America where they give you radical plastic surgery to make you look better.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be pretty ugly in order for the show to work, because you can't be just kind of normal looking, otherwise the audience doesn't go, "Ooh, they're so ugly."
Yeah.
So they agreed, the producers went and met this woman, and they agreed that, yeah, God, you're ugly.
Mm. Right, and her sister went on camera saying that her sister's ugly.
Yes.
And then the sister, who was due to get the plastic surgery, saw that her sister thinks she's ugly, and this was a revelation to her. She didn't realize that her sister hated her so much. And so then they canceled the program, and the sister who was deemed ugly killed herself.
Yes. Well, they told her that she would take too long to heal. She wouldn't heal in time for the finale of the show because she needed really radical. They needed to build out her jaw because she had very weak chin.
Right.
So they said it takes too long. You're too ugly, actually.
Well, it just reminded me of America right now, because in America, when they wake up from this dream that they're in, the American dream, and they see them, in fact, that the rest of the world has been saying behind their back how ugly it is, that they'll kill themselves.
Okay, that's a far stretch.
But it could happen. It could happen. Okay. Massive suicide. They're like, oh my God, we're ugly. We're going to kill ourselves.
I mean, they're already doing it in a different way, I guess, by buying SUVs and eating Krispy Kreme donuts. And
well, that's a slow suicide.
The World Health Organization just released a new report saying obesity is climbing faster and faster. There's 1 billion obese people on Earth right now. And within 10 years, it's going to increase 50% to 1.5 billion.
Well, that's a slow suicide. Remember, you can pick slow or quick suicide.
It's definitely more expensive as well on all of society.
Well, you borrow the money. And the banks are happy to lend you the money.
Of course.
Because they make money lending you money. Now, here's an eco-terror as it relates, so-called, to animal rights. You know, do we want to talk about this or not?
No.
You don't want to talk about animal rights?
No.
All right. Well, you animal rights people, I'm being censored, but we won't get into that right now. Here's one. Ethnic minority ghettos to be investigated. Apparently in the UK, as we alluded to earlier, there are more and more ghettos that are springing up all over the country due to this neoliberal model. And this is news to people in Britain. Of course, in America, it's nothing new there. Started with the slave trade, and it's continued ever since. You know, the UK is a perpetrator of slave trade in other countries. They didn't have slaves formally on England's soil. But now they do.
Yeah.
They've got forced consumption. Slave consumers. They go to Tesco in chains. What the chain is that refrequency card that says you keep going back to Tesco again and again and again. That's the chains of Tesco slavery.
Yeah, it's no coincidence that they call them a chain.
No,
it's a chain shop.
It's a chain. Those are the chains. The Tesco chain, because you'd be a slave in Tesco's slave farm. That's right. You just be a slave for Tesco.
Do you think there's going to be some supermarket blues coming out? You know how the slaves in America used to have, they created the blues, which were from, you know, singing the blues out of the cotton fields.
The only way to survive slavery was to, you know, get in touch with your soul. And to channel that to out, you know, and an expression of affirmation that you are somebody. Now, in the UK, you know.
You have to know Jesse Jackson's song, I Am. No, you are.
It's not a song.
Somebody.
It's a famous speech.
It's famous speech.
I am somebody, you know.
I may be on welfare, but I am somebody.
Well, I mean, this is a human cry that I am alive, I am human, and if you're a slave and you get in touch with this, it comes out in this undeniably human expression, which became the soul and blues, R&B, funk, and jazz, and what is called by the world American culture is actually from slave culture. And of course, the white people got into it, and you had Elvis Presley. But nevertheless, in the UK, we'll have real soul due to real slavery, not just that guy Simply Red.
Mick Hucknall?
Mick Hucknall. He's kind of like a fake soul singer.
Is he?
You know, the only thing he's had of any consequence in his life is some chick dumped him. So he's like, I've simply been dumped.
That's what a lot of soul music is about. My woman left me.
Yeah, but I think that's on top of a much deeper place where it comes from, you know, down there in the cotton fields, and you're a slave for the man, and, you know, it's hot outside, and you're facing death. You need to reach down deep into your soul to make a connection to God, and then you make that connection, and then you see that all happens, and this is what's kept blacks alive in America. What's that all about? I'm seeing.
We're running out of time. I see.
How much time is this?
I see the flash.
Just the big time. After this, we're off for this week. This is it for this week. This is it for now.
It's fast approaching to the end of our time for this week.
Oh, okay.
We'll be back next week. But Max has one more story here.
Let's only have one more story. Well, which one? We have many left.
I like this story about the sickness in official jobless data.
Oh, I don't know. That's technical. Isn't there something more with a punchy
Do you want to talk about Kate Moss? Everybody else is.
Well, Kate Moss, apparently, she...
Which do you prefer?